Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today, the latest on the Delaney Hall Immigration Detention Center in Newark. We'll hear from Newark Mayor Raz Baraka.
I know that the state health department went in. They wouldn't let the local health department go in.
WBGO's Janice Kirkell reports on a new Rutgers study regarding cannabis and seniors.
One in five adults older than 65 report discussing their cannabis use with their doctor.
And I'll chat with Dr. Tim Newman about the upcoming Summer Jazz Room series at William Patterson University.
I've been a trombonist and composer for decades, but it gives me a chance to bring music to people in a slightly different way, to put together a series of musicians who I think, you know, bring something very valuable to the stage and to the jazz world.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. Neither side in the federal government's case against U.S. Representative LaMonica McIver disputes that a confrontation occurred outside the Delaney Hall Immigration Detention Facility in Newark on May 9th of last year. They disagree, however, over whether the 10th District Congresswoman should face criminal charges for her actions that day. Democrat McIver, who is charged with assaulting federal agents in the incident, appeared in a federal courtroom in Delaware on Wednesday, where her attorneys again argued that the charges should be dismissed. McIver, who announced last month that she is pregnant with her second child, says she is being targeted by President Donald Trump.
And this case is about protecting members of Congress' ability to do their job on behalf of the constituents that elected them to do so.
The Congresswoman adds it's frightening, exhausting, and stressful. And she says she thinks even the Department of Justice knows that this case is extremely bogus and that it makes no sense. McIver's attorney Paul Fishman argued before a three-judge panel of the U.S. Supreme Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit Court in Wilmington, Delaware this week. During this month's edition of WBGO's Newark Today, hosted by Michael Hill, Newark Mayor Raz Baraka talked about what the city is doing regarding Delaney Hall, which has been at the center of protests about alleged inhumane conditions there.
Ms. Mayor, I'm going to talk to you about Delaney Hall. It's been in the news quite a bit. Mm-hmm. A congressional oversight committee hearing took place titled The Human Cost of Immigration Enforcement and Detention, Conditions and Oversight at Delaney Hall, convened by Congressmember LaMonica McIver and in attendance several members of New Jersey's congressional delegation, Mejia, Menendez, Poo, Watson Coleman, and perhaps more. I didn't see there on camera. Now, you took part in this as well, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
I heard your testimony. You cited the inhumane conditions in this facility, and you leaned on the phrase, if this were a nursing home.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in New Jersey, we've had our problems with the nursing homes, especially around COVID and thereafter. There were all kinds of inquiries. The Republicans and everybody were hammering the governor about what happened in the nursing homes and all of this stuff, and that, you know, there were inhumane treatment and things going wrong and people dying. Same conditions, by the way, in this Delaney Hall, being run by GEO, a private group that is trying to shelter itself or give itself immunity because they have a government contract. But they're still subject to state and local laws. And it's important for us to raise that over and over again so it could be closed down, just like a nursing home would be closed down.
Now, you also talked about the state sending inspectors in there and the city sending inspectors there, but you're not getting to all the areas that you want to get to,
right,
to see if things are kosher inside.
Absolutely. I know that the state health department went in. They wouldn't let the local health department go in, but the state went in, and they only allowed them to see the kitchen. They didn't allow them to see the rest of the facility where people are sleeping, the bathrooms, all the other kind of things. Wouldn't allow them to talk to any of the detainees, which kind of limits their inspection. We still haven't been able to get a full inspection since over a year, the city of New York. We were in mediation today with a judge and a mediator today between us and Delaney Hall. We're still waiting the outcome of what that's going to be, but we had mediation today.
What's your hope in the mediation?
That they, the courts agree that we should do a full inspection. First of all, we should be doing a full inspection because they changed the use of the property. So by virtue of the change of use, it triggers zoning laws and variances. So we should do an inspection to see if because they expanded it, do they have the proper sprinkler system, proper elevator system? Are the walls put up correct? Is the framing correct? All this stuff like any other property. It's not special. You know, it's any other property. And then because of the human rights violations or accusations, then we should be able to have the health department inspect and other folks begin to inspect as well.
Now, there was, I'm not going to say a prison break, but there was some folks who breached the wall and broke out of there. So, I mean, that tells you there, to a certain extent, that something in there in terms of the construction of it is substandard.
Right. They basically kicked through a wall or something that we probably could have told them was insufficient if we were in there doing the inspections, but they wouldn't allow us to come in, and they still won't. By the way,
you know, there are people listening to you, Mr. Mayor, and listening to others who have talked about getting into Delaney Hall to do inspections and so forth. And they're probably wondering, well, why Delaney Hall? Why don't you inspect all buildings in the city of Newark?
That's absolutely correct. We do inspect all the buildings. If you're talking about, institutions that are hold people that are incarcerated or detained, I think we should do that. In fact, somebody raised that to us. I mean, the county facilities, the state facilities that hold people. We should do investigations into that. The problem is these folks, 300 people, 300, not three, 300 people out of Delaney Hall signed a letter about things that are going wrong in the building, which triggered this kind of investigation. We didn't just arbitrarily say we want to investigate. 300 people signed a letter. That's significant, right? And then prior to that, if you bypass the city's local ordinances, of course we're going to want to do an investigation. You can't just say, oh, we're not going to go to the zoning board. We're not going to get a variance. We're not going to allow inspectors in. Yeah, we want to come and find out what's we're going to think you're hiding something.
And you have to determine, too, whether it's I don't know if the word is habitable, especially when it comes to fires and so forth.
That is the word. If it's habitable, because we can declare it uninhabitable. We can condemn it, or we can say that that they have to do more work in order to get it up to code to fit more people, the change of use. And the reality is there are many buildings that come into this situation, and they actually do the work to expand so they could change the use. And if we allow them to change the use, it just takes more time. And I think the problem here is that they didn't have the time to take, that there was a contract on the table. They needed to put their signature on a contract in order to get these detainees. So they did whatever they could as expeditious as possible to get the money to over $1 billion over the next 15 years.
And this is a private facility. The right. Building itself is owned by a private company?
That's right, by the GEO Group.
By the GEO Group.
International Private Prison Corporation.
You can hear the entire Newark Today show at wbgo.org/news. Cannabis use by older people is on the rise, but that information is not getting to their doctors. WBGO's Janice Kirkell reports that information may be vital.
Researchers at Rutgers Health have found that while cannabis use among older people is up, about 10% used it in the past year, very few are being screened for use or even talking about it with doctors. Pia Morrow is the lead author of the study. She says older people shouldn't keep this a secret.
Older adults are more likely to have chronic health conditions for which they may take multiple medications. And older adults are also at higher risk of harmful effects related to substance use. So discussing cannabis with a clinician could help answer questions that folks may have about their health.
Fewer than one in five adults older than 65 reports discussing their cannabis use with doctors. Only one in three report being screened for it.
People might have questions about whether they could use cannabis to help manage some symptoms, whether they could, for example, in the context of chronic pain. We focus on this age group because cannabis use is increasing among older adults, and actually it's the highest it's been in this age group. About 10% of older adults used cannabis in the past year.
Janice Kirkell, WBGO News.
Thank you. The William Patterson Summer Jazz Room Series is a week-long series beginning on July 20th. Inaugurated in the spring of 1978, the Jazz Room Series is the longest-running campus-based jazz concert series in the nation, with a tradition of encompassing the complete spectrum of jazz from New Orleans to the avant-garde. It features world-class professionals and William Patterson student ensembles. It's a great series. There are three series of concerts each year, including the six-concert fall and spring Jazz Room series and the week-long summer Jazz Room held the third week of July. And that's what we're talking about today, the summer Jazz Room series. And joining us is Dr. Tim Newman, not only the professor of music at William Patterson University, he's the director of the graduate program, the director of the William Patterson Summer Jazz Workshop, and producer of the William Patterson Summer Jazz Room series. Tim, great to see you.
Well, thanks, Doug. I appreciate you having me on.
So, Tim, you've been producing this series for the last 11 years. I know it's something you're extremely proud of.
It gives me an opportunity, first of all, to put on the producer hat, because I am a, you know, I'm a player and an academic. You know, I've been teaching at William Patterson now for 22 years, and I've been a trombonist and composer for decades. And but it gives me a chance to bring music to people in a slightly different way, of course, and that is to put together a series of musicians who I think, you know, bring something very valuable to the stage and to the jazz world. And I try to I inherited the production from past colleagues, and I kind of took the model that they used. I'm speaking of Rich DeRosa and David Dempsey, who produced the summer series before I did, and they always mixed it up. I mean, this year we have John Eric Kelso is bringing in a band on Monday night, and he comes from a traditional standpoint, sort of vantage point with the music, but of course he's it's not, you know, historically traditional jazz, New Orleans collective improvisation. They draw on that, but they're all very contemporary in the way they play. But that's a little different from the Tuesday night trumpet player we have coming in is Summer Camargo, who is very much rooted in sort of hard bop traditions. Wednesday, we switch gears. Joe Farnsworth is coming in, bringing Emmett Cohen, the wonderful pianist, and Joe's band that he's been working with for a long time. And that will be a very exciting evening, you know. Then Thursday night, with Duduca de Fonseca, a Brazilian jazz artist for many years, you know, very, very a veteran of the New York scene, and, you know, world known for his sort of Brazilian jazz fusion. Then Friday night, Dennis McCrell is actually bringing in a big band, which is for him. He's of course led bands as the director of Count Basie Orchestra, and he's writing more and more for big bands. So he actually proposed the idea to me. So in any case, getting back to your question, it's just such a pleasure to be able to put together a varied program made of world-class artists, also bringing in up-and-coming artists. Summer is what you might classify as up and coming. I mean, she's a good deal younger than a lot of the more established artists, but she's certainly making a name for herself, and her playing is just fantastic. We'll be right back. few years ago, you know, we had a young woman here who was sort of up and coming as well, named Samara Joy. And this was before she won the Grammy, and the summer before, and I wrote in the blurb, I said, keep an eye on her.
That's for sure.
It's just such a pleasure to be able to do this. You know, I have connections into the city and in the surrounding area, and I sound people, like I'm able to say, well, who's kind of hot, who's up and coming, who should we keep an eye on? And someone, one of my friends told me about Samara, and boom, there that happened. So it's really quite pleasurable. It's, you know, very enjoyable, and I am quite proud of it. When I look over the list of artists over the past 11 years, I'm really happy to be able to bring to, you know, Northern New Jersey this sort of opportunity to hear music. You don't have to go into New York City. You know, you don't have to pay a cover charge. I mean, you can pay for a weekly pass, $75. You can see 5 concerts, you know, an hour and a half set. If you went in to some of the clubs in New York City, you would pay that much, maybe for parking. So it's not only, you know, great artists, but it's certainly something that's affordable for people in the area.
Now, I've attended this Summer Jazz Room series, and I know that a lot of the students of William Patterson University show up in droves, because not only do they like to see, you know, people like yourself being involved who they have in their class, but they also like to see these up-and-coming artists and the established artists. William Patterson has been a strong university for jazz for so many years and has such a great reputation. It continues to build. What have you learned from your students recently?
Oh, what have I learned from my students? Well, first of all, I mean, the thing that we as educators are dealing with a lot these days is the use of artificial intelligence, right? And that's something that academics are wrestling with, this new technological, you know, development that's affecting the world in so many different ways. And what I've learned from my students is they want to play music with people. They want to make music themselves without the use of computers, without AI. They want to write their papers without AI. Many of them, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, academics sort of think that many students are using it as a crutch, or they're using it. But what I've learned from them is that there's no substitute for the musical and sort of interaction that goes on. And the amazing, I mean, when you think about the physiological, what's going on in the brain and the body during when a jazz trio plays, for example, you know, the amount of learned history that each individual brings to the table, you know, and the way they interact in the moment, the way they're feeling in the moment, this is nothing that can be replaced by machines. And this is one thing that, you know, my students keep, you know, the students of William Patterson, I should say, keep emphasizing. And they also emphasize, I mean, things that we know, the value of community. I mean, we have a great student community at William Patterson, you know, both undergraduates and graduate students, you know, play together in the school, in the curriculum. You know, of course, they have to play as part of their degree programs, but then they play a lot outside of school. They really form very close bonds with each other. So it's constantly reinforcing the fact to me that community is important. That's how this music grew. That's how this music developed. That's how it was born, through community. And that's how it's truly perpetuated.
I love your background, not only as a trombonist, but you've explored many kind of styles and genres. You had residence for a couple of years in the symphony orchestras in South America. You've got your BM degree from William Patterson College at the time, an MM from the Manhattan School of Music, and a doctorate from New York University. Your time at William Patterson, tell us about some of the professors that you had and how you were inspired.
Oh, I'd love to do that. Well, First of all, my major mentor was Rufus Reed. He has the role now that Bill Charlap now has, and before Bill Mulgrew Miller, before Mulgrew James Williams, and Rufus really took me under his wing in a way, because I was a little bit older. I was in my late 20s. I had been to South America already, you know, and there wasn't a graduate program at that time. It was a college. So Rufus took me under his wing, and he gave me, you know, a little more responsibility, and you know, that was just great. He really understood what I needed in my particular stage, and that's the mark of a true mentor and educator, is to see the student and see what that particular student needs, and not use any sort of like cookie cutter. So Rufus, and of course Rufus was someone who I had seen since my teens, going into the city to see a host of things, among, you know, Thad Jones's Mel Lewis Orchestra, and seeing Rufus, and, you know, in the back with his pipe, and I first knew him as an iconic bass player, and then he became a mentor. You know, Todd Kuhlman, another bass player, was at school, and he before he became the director of at Purchase College. He was a wonderful educator, and I remember him giving lectures on how to learn tunes on the bandstand, and things like that. Joe Lovano was teaching, you know, before he left, went up to Berkeley, but he was at the school and teaching. And I remember, you know, being in just sessions where the students were playing and he was listening, and I got very positive feedback. It was wonderful. My colleagues at that point, my peers, were Joe Farnsworth and Bill Stewart and Doug Weiss and a whole host of others, that so I learned as much from them, you know, as I did from the professors. So it was a wonderful environment, and I believe that it's still that way today. It's a different bunch of faces, but you know, and I'm just so gratified to be able to be now in the position of mentoring students, but also, as you say, learning from the students, because it's, you know, we're just when you get older, you're just maybe a more advanced learner, but that's the way we think of ourselves.
It's a true fraternity. Do you look at yourself, I like to call individuals like yourself connectors, because you have the connection to great artists from the past, present, and then you'll be able to connect these students to future successes and artistry. So that's a special role, I'm sure, that you treasure in it.
Yes, yeah. As you get more advanced in years, sometimes you're not paying as much attention to what's really cutting edge on the scene. And, you know, I'm learning Sonny Rollins solos and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm not necessarily going out as much as maybe I used to, you know, to hear the people who are on the cutting edge. But the students keep me, you know, to a certain degree, you know, the learning. I have an assignment in my jazz history class where I ask the students, I tell them, you're the editor of the jazz textbook that we're using, and you're writing the next chapter. And in each textbook, there's usually a few artists that are held up as sort of the iconic artists of that particular time. So you're writing the textbook about today. You know, what musicians are you going to look at? And they bring in recordings. And that's how I discovered people like Thundercat, and how I discovered people like Robert Glasper. You know, a student brought him in. This was in 2005 or something like that. It was my second year teaching. They said, check this guy out. You know, he's going to be, and sure enough, he is in the Norton, you know, textbook on jazz history, and probably others. So that's very gratifying to me to be able to try to stay connected to you know, looking forward and where this music is going and how it's mixing with culturally and musically with all with the world, what's going on musically in the world today.
Tim, for those who haven't attended the Summer Jazz Room series, tell our audience what they can expect. You know, when they come in, how it's put together and how the concert develops.
Yeah, it's in the summer. It's slightly different from the fall and the spring. You mentioned the student-led ensembles. In the fall and the spring, of course, since the school year is going on at that time, we actually used this opportunity to feature our top ensembles. We have 23-24 small groups at William Patterson. It's the heart of our program. And that's, it's not a big band school like some others are, but we do have a jazz orchestra, of course. But in any case, the top ensembles get to open the jazz room for the artists. So in the spring and the fall, the audience member would come in and they would hear a 45-minute set by a great student ensemble, and then there would be about an hour and 15-minute set or so by the featured artist. In the summer, we don't have the students. The students that are around come, but we don't have they've all kind of gone to the four winds here and gone home, because we get students, of course, from all over the country. And so an audience member will just basically hear an hour and a half set. We start at 7:30 and we end, near 9 o'clock. So it's a longer set than you might hear in the city. Usually they're about an hour and 15 minutes or something in the city. So it's slightly longer, and it gives the artists a chance to really present a variety of their material to the audience. It's a large auditorium. It's not an intimate room, so we do our best to fill it up. But the way that the auditorium is built, if people are in the front section, it feels, when you're on stage, it feels more intimate, and also the audience feels, like if everyone's sitting up front, that they're part of the energy of the audience is there. So that's what to expect. It's basically an hour and a half set, boom, like that. But the price is right. It's $20 a night, and as I said, or $75 for the week if you wanted to get the week long pass.
What's been the most impactful response you've got over the years about the Summer Jazz Room series, whether it be from a student or just someone who wanted to hear these players?
First thing that comes to mind is just sort of student response to certain players that they haven't ever heard before. For example, we've had Rossano Sportiello, the great pianist, at the Jazz Room series quite a few times. He's brought in his own groups, and actually this summer he's going to perform with John Eric Kelso's band, so that should be just wonderful. And he is, he is quite a unique player. He's sort of grounding in the stride and the going back before bebop, and the piano styles of Teddy Wilson and others of that era. Any case, I've had pianists students who've seen him live, they were really impressed, and they really wanted to check him out more. And that's one of the things that I'm really glad to be able to do is turn people on, to other artists that they might not check out that really would make an impact on them.
So it's the William Patterson Summer Jazz Room Series and begins on July 20th. And Tim, for more information, where can people go?
There's a website called WP Presents, and you'll see all the information you need there for tickets. And of course, you can walk up and buy tickets the day of as well.
Once again, the Jazz Room Series is the longest-running campus-based jazz concert series in the nation, produced by Dr. Timothy Newman, professor of music at William Patterson University and the longtime producer of the Summer Jazz Room Series at WP. Tim, great to have you here, and continued success.
Thank you very much, Doug. I really appreciate coming on and being able to talk about this, which, as you say, means so much to me.
You can see my entire interview with Dr. Tim Newman on the WBGO YouTube channel. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO, at WBGO.org.